Hey, just a brief programming note. We intended to do an episode-by-episode breakdown of Daredevil, but we feel like it's not working as well. And we've also been looking at the traffic, and it seems like it's different from show-by-show, but there's a certain amount of weeks after Netflix drops it where the interest kind of peaks and then wanes. And we've waded hip-deep into that this week. So we're going to change the plans. We're going to finish out 210, which I think is the next episode, on Friday. Mm-hmm. And then the following Monday, after this weekend, we're going to release our coverage of all the final three episodes in one block, like we did with House of Cards, which everyone seemed to really enjoy.
Yeah.
And allowed us to, I think our coverage would have been a lot different if we'd have taken these things in three episode chunks.
For sure.
And it would have been better. So what I'm saying is, if you've got any last minute thoughts about like wrap up type stuff, because I'm kind of on the fence about whether we'll do a dedicated wrap up episode. Since everyone has, except for us, seen the entire series, go ahead and watch it this weekend if you haven't, and send in your feedback for the whole season as a whole. And we'll probably consider that in a supersized Monday episode that wraps up Daredevil.
Yep, for episodes 11, 12, and 13. Just do one big podcast, so.
Yep, so just wanted to mention that.
Welcome to What's Cooking in Hell's Kitchen, the officially unofficial podcast for Daredevil on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 9, entitled 7 Minutes in Heaven. This is not the 7 Minutes in Heaven that I was familiar with.
I've
played this game. That's not my version.
I was looking forward to 7 solid minutes of someone making out with Deborah Ann Woll. Instead, I got 7 minutes of punchy, punchy, stabby, stabby.
Although, I can't really complain.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
The punchy, punchy, stabby, stabby is pretty good in this episode.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
I think this episode was a return to form.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really, really enjoyed this episode a lot. It surprised me, too, because it kind of came out of nowhere. Like,
yeah,
we saw Fisk at the end, but I really didn't think they'd go for a whole prison episode, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Although they did. They did quite a bit outside of prison, too. I guess everybody kind of got to shine here.
Yeah.
There were conversations happening that were long overdue that kind of came to a head. Just all around, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, I continue to think that when, Foggy and Karen seem to be incapable of having a realistic, serious conversation. They have great chemistry when they're just fucking around or they're friends,
okay.
But that still continues to bug me. But everything else really just worked in this episode.
Right. Right. Matt and Foggy had the realest of conversations this episode, which...
I think it was real good. Like he did the whole "I want to try separation, fuck you on a divorce." You know, that's
well,
the way that went down.
I mean, he's just uncompromising in who he is and what he's
going to do.
And I did too. I think superheroes probably ought to be that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can understand why you would want to try, and it would be surprising for me to see them completely abandon the Trinity, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like he's got to find a way to have a relationship, because I'm wondering, with him being completely shut out on his own, if he's going to realize that he might slip into Frank Castle land faster than if he has a support system. And maybe his support system needs to go into that with their eyes wide open.
Right.
So all you got to do is tell Karen the truth, figure out some way to isolate the Matt Murdock from them so there's no connection to Daredevil, and then they can be, you know, you can have this crime-fighting triumvirate. I hope that's what happens.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Because
you've
think
got
Matt
the lawyer,
get,
you've got the crime fighter, and you've got the reporter now.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good mix. And you also, he loses Elektra this episode as well. Not loses her, but sends her away as well.
Yeah, I wonder, and I felt like
killing
that.
People.
I that felt a little quick after, we'll find some way to make this work. Oh, you slit a guy's throat? Okay, it's over.
Really? Because I felt like the betrayal, like...
Yeah.
The showing her true colors was quick, too.
You're right. The fact that, like, we just had this conversation where you said you're going to be good, and then you decided not to. Now, she had a pretty good argument about, like, hey, this was in self-defense.
Right. And the same kind of argument we had, right? Like, now the trouble's coming to you. We can't let it get back to him.
Yeah.
like all that kind of stuff.
But
so.
You're right. They're both kind of uncompromising, or at least Matt is, and he's like, I thought it was interesting. He said we should stop corrupting each other, almost like I'm not even going to make a moral judgment on your choice here.
Okay.
It might be better than mine, but I'm not going to have any truck with it.
Is he softening his stance after the Punisher stuff? Because it was kind of the same thing with the Punisher.
You know, I do feel like that there is some kind of... that we're actually seeing the character Daredevil evolve.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think he'll ever... I don't think he'll ever kill anyone intentionally. I don't know, man. That's always interesting, because that's... So, you know, not to get all Batman and Superman on it, but, you know, there's a lot of people saying about that iteration of Batman and Superman. It's like, well, you know, some of the more interesting things in Batman's history involve him killing. And I'm always like, yeah, that's true, because when you get these Elseworld Batmans that are actually killing because, you know, the Joker finally killed Robin and he snapped, or, you know, whatever the reasons are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's essentially something you do for the hardcore comics fan that have kind of been bored with the regular stuff. And it's like, okay, we're just going to make Batman the badass killer you've always wanted to see. But that's not... It's weird to start a franchise off of that. I kind of feel like they could maybe have Matt kill somebody. And I don't know anything about the character of Daredevil. But they could have maybe Matt kill someone as a dramatic thing in the middle. Or maybe the finale of this season.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're 2 years into it. We're ready to see... You know, it's great to have a black and white philosophy. What happens if you have to break that philosophy, if you're forced to?
Right, right. And it seems like this show has been carrying this theme off a little more successfully than, I don't know, perhaps another show we're watching currently.
Sure.
Haven't been dwelling on it quite as much. And I don't know. For some reason, they take it more seriously to me.
We know what it is. It's the fact that the zombie apocalypse is just way more silly when you're talking about morality, ethics, and law.
That's true.
When you're living in the real city and there's like still a functioning civil society with...
Right.
But it's kind of broken too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more shades of gray and stuff where it's like, oh, well, yeah, you can do that, but you can't do that. If everybody did that, then where in the zombie apocalypse is kind of like it's more of just a science lab, just whatever the fuck you want to do, see which kind of Darwinistic approach works best.
Yeah, so I am glad though, because when he put his foot down on Elektra, it really felt like the only decision his character could make. If he kept waffling on this, I would be like, oh man,
yeah,
really more of this. You see who she is.
Well, also he could get her killed. Like, you know,
right.
Her fighting style seems to be predicated on killing fools. So, you know, if she's fighting with one of her arms behind her back, whereas his style has never included that, I feel like, you know, if you just talk about a superhero thematic thing, like whenever the guy, like if the Punisher fights with Daredevil, I feel like the Punisher is putting himself at more risk because he's just a normal dude. And now he doesn't have guns.
Yeah. And he almost did get them both killed last episode.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. There's some danger there.
Let's talk about the Kingpin, because, goddamn, really missed Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
And he's a monster. Like, I want to retract a little bit about his weak arms, because I don't know whether he bulked up
his bird
in
arms.
Between the cameo of last episode of this one, but holy shit. When he went toe-to-toe with the Punisher, I believed it.
Yeah. Yeah, and choke slams him on the table and starts beating his fists on him.
You kind of think that the Punisher is doing well.
Like, I thought so.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, Frank's taking him to school. Nah. Fisk was just fucking with him.
Yeah, Fisk can take a punch and he can deal a punch.
And then once he gets a hold of you, what are you going to do? Yeah. The man benches 500 pounds.
Right. it's great, and I love his battle against this other Kingpin, this Dutton guy. Is that his name? Mm-hmm.
Played by William Forsythe, who is one of the great gang, like, you know, you're going to see him in Boardwalk Empire, you're going to see him in Dick fucking Tracy, of course.
He's kind of a sloppy gangster, like, not sloppy in the ways he conducts his business, but his look is a little sloppy to me.
Yeah, he's a
little
jowly.
He always seemed a little disheveled.
Yeah,
and,
sure. Hair looks like maybe could have been washed yesterday.
Right, and certainly, you know, he's in prison, so I'm not going to give him too much shit in this role, but he always kind of plays that for
That's
me.
Yeah, he's like, if you want to cast a hard-boiled, badass, bad guy, you put William Forsythe in there and he's going to do it. But they introduce a lot of things. Like, I originally thought that the Kingpin was kind of cowed. Like, I'm like, oh, man, he's going back to his little sad fat boy routine. Like, he's scared of his own shadow. Do you think that that was genuinely his mental state and Dutton coming up and challenging him awoke the beast? Do you think if Dutton had just laid back and been like, I'm the kingpin, I don't need to, this guy's some tin pot dictator, that Fisk would have just kept his head down and served his time?
I'm not sure, because there's that opening shot where he's sitting there staring at that wall, right? Which is obviously reminiscent of the painting that he had. And, but, you know, the thing with his dad.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
That whole childhood thing.
No fooling.
So I don't know if that's him, like, going back into kingpin mode, or if he has to wait until the guy comes in and threatens him.
See, I always thought that they used that as a motif last year when he was at his weakest. He would meditate on that wall.
Right, and then kind of power back up.
Oh, so, see, I got there, like, that was, like, almost he goes into a fugue state and he retreats back into the fat little boy. Like, he's,
okay,
you know, the scared, chubby little boy that his dad, you know, always is disappointed in. Like, I can't, honestly, I don't know, and I don't, it's not a problem I have with D'Onofrio's performance. There's just a lot going on there that I can't fully unpack. And I'm like, was he scared and like, okay, fine, I'm just going to get straight, and then I might get back to Kingpin on the outside, and Dutton did it to himself? Or was he just biding his time and appearing weak until he found his strength?
I'm not sure. Could have been the line, I'm the kingpin of this bitch. That could have been it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if Dutton had rolled tough on him after he met with the mortgage analyst in the lunchroom, I would have been like, oh, yes, he was just biding his time until he could get strength.
This, right.
Since that happened immediately following Dutton introducing himself, that could be seen as, well, fuck, I guess I got to have to kingpin up in this, because this guy's not going to let well enough alone.
Yeah, and what you said about him never wanting to be powerless last episode, never more in full effect than here.
Sure.
He realizes this is a place where he is powerless, and he decides to take the power back. I really like his conversation with Frank toward the beginning there, where he's, he talks about having developed an empathy towards those who suffer at the hands of the law. I don't think he's talking about mandatory sentencing or bail posting too high.
Anytime I see a minority get thrown away for life for a dime bag, my blood boils. Yeah, no, I don't.
Something tells me that's not what he's on about. He's more like, the law is screwing people. Just like,
oh,
the law
demagogue
is not a thing
he's Pablo
that
Escobar-ing.
I respect. I'm going to take the law into my own hands. It's way darker. It's a really twisted kind of philosophy that's expressed in a way that you could almost understand why he would think that.
It's becoming more clear to me that he, like, you know, we had that question last episode about whether he is relatively altruistic, and he doesn't want any other person to be afraid like him. He wants to provide, through his own brutal methods and effective methods, a safe society where, you know, people like his father can't menace families and people like himself can grow up and feel safe and secure, versus fuck the world, I'm just never going to be victimized again. It feels like more and more it's the latter.
Yeah.
And that Hell's Kitchen is going to be devastated under his rule rather than flourish. Which, I don't know. I mean, I kind of wish they'd find a way to shade back towards the Pablo Escobar running for the Congress version of Kingpin. Because I mean, what I'm saying is, it's different between the conscious and subconscious motivation. Like, it's becoming clear to me that he knows that he's doing something bad for Hell's Kitchen. I'd like for him to subconsciously, you know, be acting on this need to protect himself and the people he loves from and fuck the world, but consciously saying, I'm doing this for the city.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. That's what I'm looking for.
I wonder how you express that, like, to the audience, like, subconscious versus conscious decision.
Well, I mean,
I guess you have other characters say, no, this is what you're doing. And
when he lets the Punisher out on the city to make it bleed,
right?
Like, he's just letting a random loose cannon out on the streets. That implies, And I feel like his speech was, when Frank is basically calling bullshit the entire time, we're supposed to understand that this is insincere.
Okay.
I think you
so
just
do that.
Maybe have a way for, but I don't know how you do that, because he's immediately double crosses Frank.
Right.
Do you have a, okay, let me ask you this. Do you have a problem with Frank going along with this?
after being double-crossed and almost
because
killed?
My immediate reaction is I don't see the... Because, again, I'm a big Punisher fan, and like I don't see the Punisher working for the Kingpin under any circumstances, but I think I've walked that back. But I'm curious about what you think.
Well, Frank is also working for himself. He goes into Dutton. He stabs him. He finds out...
Independent contractor.
Right. He finds out that he's not actually the guy who orchestrated the whole thing. There's this guy named Black Sabbath or something. What is it?
Blacksmith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Black. It's Ozzy Osbourne. He's biting off bat heads and he's draining their blood in the vats. What are you going to do?
There's this guy who actually orchestrated the whole thing and was supposed to show up at the meet and then didn't. And when they realized he wasn't showing up, they realized it was a setup. There's an undercover cop there, like, and shit just went off the rails. And the massacre happened.
There was this funny thing.
I feel like Frank is now just... He got out of prison. He used Kingpin almost to get out of prison to go find this guy.
It's a perfect situation where they both think they're using each other.
Right.
And, like, you know, at the end where it's like, well, if I meet you, only one of us is walking away. And Kingpin's like, I'm counting on it. Like, they know...
Uh-huh.
They both think they have the upper hand. And it's going to be super interesting to see who wins.
Yeah. And then on the other side of that Kingpin, he wants the streets cleared for his, for his stuff when he gets out, right?
It's going to be that much easier for him to win his war.
Right.
If the competition continues to be swept clean.
So it's a win-win for both of them.
Yeah. I do think that it came across as funny, Frank's interrogation of Dutton for a bit when Dutton's like, the deal went south. And Frank's like, what do you mean went south? The deal went south. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, do I have to explain a common metaphor to you? Like, uh-huh. It went pear-shaped.
There's nothing wrong with the South. What's wrong with you?
That's right.
What do you mean?
I spent a lot of time in Georgia. It's a beautiful state. I think that's my final reaction is like, this is not the Kingpin in the comics. This is the rise of the Kingpin.
Okay.
So I have to get it out of my mind. Like, this is like if like Superman went to high school with Lex Luthor, which I kind of think is a canon thing. They used to be best friends. You can't say like, oh, that's unrealistic to Superman and hang out with a young Lex Luthor because he wasn't Lex Luthor yet.
Right.
So the Punisher can be like, you know what? I can use this arrogant motherfucker to my own ends. So I think I'm mollified.
Yeah, I'm fine with the way that went down. I early on in this episode, I was hyped for this Punisher fight scene. He's like, I'm going to set you up for Dutton. I'm going to, you know, create a window where you can get in there. I kept getting more and more hyped. And then it kind of almost subverted my expectations.
I know, I like, was about to say the same thing.
I thought he was going to go on a killing rampage.
Sure.
Cut through a cell block worth of people.
Kill your way to justice.
To get to Dutton, and then he was going to just take him out. But it actually went much better than I expected. That fight is so bloody.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, just visceral and real and...
Well, and every time I feel like they get in this long hallway, I'm like, oh, God, they're going to do a fucking hallway fight right. again. But they always find a way to, like, okay, now it's a staircase and there's a twisting... Now it's like the contrast between him and Matt.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fucking animal going to work with just sticks.
Yeah. At one point, does he have an axe? Is that what I saw?
That prison hatchet was was horrific, man.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I want to read my notes.
And then just the way he's covered, he's drenched in blood at the end, and he cuts that guy open.
Do you think that him and Andy Lincoln have a deal? Like, who can be most soaked in blood in this season of television? Because it's like, oh, yeah, you have a little blood dripping out of your beard. Check this shit out.
Yeah. I'm gonna spray myself with it, mouth open.
Did you notice the fact when he killed that dude on his chest, it left like a bloody Punisher logo?
Oh no, I didn't see that.
Oh, it's like you know when Forrest Gump wipes his face and comes away.
Yeah,
it's just like that, except for a bloody skull. It's pretty subtle. In fact, Cess and I were watching. I'm like, oh, it's a Punisher skull. She's like, oh, bullshit. And I'm like, no, look at it. Look, and she didn't see it until I think. There's a scene where they drag him over a puddle, and you can see a reflection. He almost sees it, like, "Oh, I wonder if that's going to be the birth of his costume."
I like it,
but yeah, my notes are: Frank takes a shiv through the arm, which is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Breaks a dude's neck. The slow-mo stuff, I thought, really shows off the timing because they obviously filmed that in full speed or approximately, and they probably. Well, what do you think? They undercrank it so they're actually moving slow. but then they super slow it so it looks like, because it,
I don't know,
these things are missing by inches when, and they always do the slow-mo really effectively where you're like, wow, if they're like a half second earlier or later, John Bernthal is taking a prison hatchet to the face.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that stuff. Probably a lot of CG mixed in there, too.
It's also probably foam rubber.
Yeah, so you hit him in the face with foam, who cares?
Sure.
There were a couple scenes where I think it was pretty obvious that he wasn't actually punching the guy in the face. Like, he's got him down on the ground, and he's punching, like, kind of just below the camera.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's, like, punching him in the shoulder or something.
Yeah.
Like, but I think he's really hitting the actor, which sold it
More than it should have. I feel like the... It's been a while since I noticed the but the guy's face wasn't on screen, so
right. And the axe, I think he hits, but it kind of glances the guy.
And it's digital blood, but I thought the effect was actually much better than what we see on like that other show. His thumbs in a dude's eye.
Yeah.
Oh man! And then when the cops come in, like they're Spartan warriors, and they're got this drum beat, and they got this gas canister, and he's just standing there in a rising gas. I'm like, wow. Okay, I'm back on. Like again, don't know how you do Punisher for 12, 13 episodes, but can we get a John Bernthal Punisher movie on Netflix?
Right. Yeah, I was impressed by all the Punisher stuff this time, and all the Kingpin stuff.
So what else we want to
talk? Can I just say someone's going to lose their fucking job? The Punisher gets back out on the street. When they find out that the Punisher got out of prison, someone's got to lose their job.
Yeah, and we got some feedback about that, so I don't want to step on it, but...
Okay.
And I will, for the record, I don't have a problem with the Kingpin rising to power this quickly.
I don't either.
Because it feels like that he has got this all, like, he knows exactly how much money, he knows exactly how much it's going to cost to buy these, and buy good loyalty.
Right.
Like, there's a thing, it's like, you know, your protection, your bribes weren't cheap. He's like, nor should they be, because if you're trying to cheap out on your bribes, you're just asking to be double-crossed.
Right. And he's a super villain. He's not just a villain.
Yeah, this is like, I think they've established that, yeah, he's psychotic, but he's super intelligent. And he's also a physical fucking freak.
Yeah.
He's got bear strength.
right.
So, should we talk about Froggy and Karen, what's going on with them, or should we go to the Daredevil plot?
Let's save the Daredevil thing, because that kind of has some reveals.
I need
at
a
the
break.
And...
I can only get so erect.
Yeah.
when we're talking about fight scenes and stuff. So let's talk about Karen and Foggy.
Okay, we kind of talked a little bit about Karen, and Foggy, but like I said at the beginning, I think these are conversations that needed to happen just to get the plot moving in a direction, with some actual, gusto, because like before they were spinning their tires on this.
I was
for a while.
I was annoyed by how obtuse Foggy was in dealing with Karen in the early goings this episode, because Karen's like got this super interesting stuff that's super relevant, and he's just in like, my law firm's failed. I don't understand why he went from like, well, you're out of a job, you need to beat the streets, kid, to like, what if you and I work together? Like, why didn't he propose that? He can't work with her because he kind of loves her?
I don't know. I felt like he was kind of in shock. Like, he didn't expect for this Matt thing to go off the way it did.
That's a good point.
And he comes back and he's like, God, I just lost my law firm probably, my best friend. Like, there's a lot of shit going on in Foggy's head. I feel like that conversation was okay.
Okay.
Like, he didn't want to talk about it, but he didn't really want to think about anything. He was just like... almost numb at that point.
Okay, that's a fair point. What did you think about Karen's reaction to finding that Foggy knew that Matt had a girl in his bed? She says she essentially lets him off the hook for not being warned, but she doesn't want to be lied to going forward.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, you don't feel betrayed at all by
I kind of respect Karen's position on that, because it's one thing, like, you know, if I knew you had a girlfriend who's cheating on you, I would certainly tell you because you're my friend.
Okay.
If you were beefing with another one of my friends and I'm just a observer, I don't think, like, to me, my code as a loyal friend says that I don't share, like, I'm not going to pass dirty laundry on to you or vice versa.
Okay, so Matt and Foggy have been friends longer and you think he needs to be loyal to Matt versus being loyal to Karen?
Well, I mean, there's a line, like, if... Yeah,
I mean,
probably,
I'm not judging, I guess, that. I'm just asking, is that That's kind of the position you take.
But I think, yeah, like, it's... And he told, and also it's like, I think he told Matt, and I also kind of think that he would have told Karen, have Karen and him been in a more real relationship.
Right.
And it gone, and he kind of gave Matt, like, the one, it's like, you should be the one to tell him, and I thought, took that as a little bit of a threat, like, you need to tell her before I do.
Right.
So, I feel like everyone played this as an adult. Like, Foggy didn't be like, oh, I was gonna tell you, but fucking Matt, and Karen is like, well, I don't expect you to betray your best friend over, you know, your...
Okay.
So, yeah, I was impressed with the adultness of everyone's reaction to everything.
Yeah, no, I mean, the conversation between Matt and Foggy really impressed me. I thought...
Yes.
Matt not budging on the Daredevil thing versus being a lawyer thing and being willing to shut down this office, potentially blow up two friendships as Daredevil to do the thing that he has spent his life trying to do, you know?
I mean, I wonder if it's just the guy that plays Foggy, I don't think can do sad. He can play like funny and arrogant, yeah, and competent, but like he seems like I didn't get the fact that he was really sad. When I just thought he was like sleepwalking through his lines,
just sleepy.
He's sleepy. Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, like, this, they're having this very intense conversation, Matt and Foggy, and the entire time I'm thinking, look at me when I'm talking to you, damn it, because like it's got to be off-putting to have a conversation with someone who isn't looking at you. And yes, I know he's blind.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Not blaming him for that. I'm saying
the overriding of the inbred social cues,
right. Like,
now they've been friends for so many years that I you know,
that probably doesn't bother Foggy, but
yeah.
But it was something I noticed, and I was like, oh man, that has to be weird having that conversation.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, he's completely alone, right, Matt? He doesn't have anybody. He threw Elektra out. He threw Stick out. He threw Karen and
that's what I'm saying.
Foggy out. He's totally just gonna do his Daredevil thing,
which can't last.
And you can almost feel it. Like, there's a kind of anger in him,
mm-hmm,
toward the end of this episode.
Like, I'm not doing anything wrong. Fuck you guys for judging me.
And well, yeah, I mean, in these conversations, there's kind of a bit of anger, too. There's a little bit of anger, a little bit of sadness that this is what he needs to do.
Yeah.
But toward the end of this, when he goes out and he starts fighting and trying to find the blacksmith or the black hand or the black sky, whatever it is, you can feel a little bit more of an edge to Daredevil, and I think that's kind of what you're sensing with,
and they've been building
that idea that he's changing. Yeah,
they've been building that with him rebarring that guy up, and
yeah, now it's kind of starting to come to a head. He's losing people. He's not getting the job done. Like, all this shit.
All right, before we get into the Daredevil, because we're about to veer off into Daredevil, I want to talk about Karen and her being offered a job at the Bulletin. Yes,
I think so. She's got an office now, or at least a place to sit.
And it's Ben's old joint.
Yeah.
So what led up to this, just to real briefly recap, is she, after her disappointment with Foggy, she went to visit the editor, whose name I still don't know, but I'm liking him more and more. He's like the thinking man's Hammer.
Yeah, the Daredevil version of Hammer.
I don't understand it, because Hammer's smart, too. He's just, he's the Marvel Universe Hammer from House of Cards.
Thor's Hammer.
he's that's Mjolnir. His name, Mjolnir.
However you say that.
So she goes to take him all the stuff that she's discovered. He's impressed as hell and says, hey, you know, you're shaking the right trees. We got to go now talk to the ME to get a thing on this John Doe. I also like it. She's like, oh, you're sending me? Like, no, don't get cocky. You need me to come along with.
Right.
So they go to an ME to just hold up in a hotel. I'm kind of amazed that he's willing to talk to anybody. After Elektra comes and says, I'm going to beat the piss out of you, and also everyone else that threatened you was going to, like, he's got so many people threatening his life, he's opens up. I get it, he's like, hey, I want to be on Deep Background. This is the story. You need to find another way to corroborate the story so I'm not involved, but still, that's ballsy.
And he's been living kind of this life for a while of fear, right?
I guess that's
like,
true.
He wants to get out of it, and they promise him a way out. Like, look, if we can put these people away, you can go back to living your life. And that's kind of what he wants, so.
But he drops the bomb that the John Doe, who was removed from the murder scene, is on no official records, was an undercover cop.
Right. Something in his shoe? A marker in his shoe? Is that how they
yeah,
tell?
Yeah. Like some kind of code word or like a safe, something he could, I don't know what. But I don't know how you'd use that. Like, flip off your shoe. I'm all right.
Right. I saw The Departed.
Yeah.
It can still go bad.
Oh, sure. I saw The Departed as well. It's kind of forgettable, honestly. I never understood why people thought that was an amazing movie. Controversial opinion.
It had a lot of stars in it.
I also hate The Usual Suspects, so right. Everybody come at me. Come at me! I feel like the inbox is going to be a bunch of people with shields banging nightsticks on it. shit, where was I going with this, man?
I don't know.
Oh, so this... We're back on the Reyes. How do you pronounce this person's name? Because I've been doing it wrong.
The DA?
Yeah.
I think it's Reyes.
Okay. Reyes is dirty again, right? Because if it's an undercover cop and she's the top cop in the city or the top prosecutor, she's the one that would probably set up or work closely with the department on this.
I could believe Reyes is dirty. I could definitely believe that.
And also, like, Karen got this information way back when from the assistant DA with the, you know, like, I need some leverage on your boss. And this has all led to this. So, like, I do think that she's involved in some extent.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a hard sell for me.
So they decide that, so they got that bombshell information. We also found from the blacksmith, we didn't talk about this, but the blacksmith is the one that set up this buy because he's a supplier of pure heroin from the Far East, which is interesting. That seems like a hand connection. And right. He engineered this deal amongst the three biggest gangs in New York. There was an undercover there. People found out. All went to shit. We know that.
Yeah, so it feels like maybe the blacksmith wanted to take out all these gangs.
Yeah.
Set something up that would go bad.
Yeah. So Karen comes in, and the editor, I thought, offered her a job. You seem to be like maybe they're easing into it.
No. I think it's, okay. It's pretty much a done deal.
And because he says, look, you know, you need to keep following this because you got a knack for it and you're really good at it. Something I agree with. Right. And
I'm worried about Foggy. What's he doing for a job?
He's drinking the eel, man.
You got to have money to drink the eel or goodwill, I guess, if you can go drink for free at the bar. But
that's true.
I don't know what he's doing.
I wonder how they're going to keep him occupied.
Yeah.
But anyway, he offers her a job, and she gets Ben's old office, which I thought was pretty already emotionally satisfying. But they threw a curveball. There's a Karen Page file on his desk, and she goes and opens it, and there's this clipping from a mysterious car crash, which I was able to do some freeze-frame sleuthing and find out that the driver was a 16-year-old Kevin Page, same last name as Karen. We know Karen had a brother.
You want a job? I have an extra office. A dead guy worked in it.
You mean the closet here?
Yeah.
In the Bald Moose studio?
Right, it's a little cold in there.
Ooh, all right. Well, I get a little hot sometimes.
So her brother...
Is there anything we can infer from the circumstances? Because the first I'm thinking, drunk driver? Or maybe was she the driver? Because she has this extreme emotional reaction.
So... I think the circumstances on their own, no. But the circumstances in this fictional world with the characters' reactions, yes.
Because the circumstances are, it happened in the daytime, it's 1:40, doesn't seem like alcohol to be involved.
Single car crash. 16,
car crash in broad daylight, and he veered off the road, went through a chain link fence, slammed into an embankment, and died on the scene.
Right.
If that's foul play... How in the hell does this all connect? Why was Ben digging into it? And why is Karen have this... these are all the mysteries we're supposed to be asking, right?
Right. I mean, we don't know anything about her brother, do we?
I mean, she mentioned that she had one when she was getting to know you phase with Ben, with Matt.
Right. But, like, how does that connect to the case or the hand or anything?
But it's important enough that they established it early on in the season.
Yeah.
So then when they reveal this... And the other thing is, what percentage of people did they count on freeze-framing this?
The internet, so all of the people,
probably. Okay.
Probably not. I don't know. Netflix is its own beast, too, because you're already on the internet.
So I feel like this is the first Martin reveal. Like, if you're really super sharp, you're going to have an extra piece of information. It's going to be made obvious an episode or two from now.
Yeah. So, I don't know that they're quite revealing anything other than something nefarious, potentially, right? Like, they don't reveal any details about it.
Yeah. One random thought before we move into Daredevil and finish this up. When Fisk confronts the Punisher in his cell, is the Punisher being held in the Cloud City detention facility?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think
he's
I saw
got
Chewie
C-3PO strapped to his back.
I thought I saw Chewie screwing together C-3PO's head on backwards in the corner.
Uh-huh. You're right. That room is shaped.
If someone told me that that's just a spray painted different on of the same set, I would totally believe it.
With better lighting.
That couldn't. Yeah, yeah. They actually paid the light bill. Lando, you know, he's got a lot of cutbacks.
Right.
Struggling to make ends meet before he made that deal with the Empire.
Can I say one more thing about the Karen brother situation?
Yeah.
It felt a little strange because Karen looks at this folder. She opens it up, says car crash, and starts crying. I don't know why that made such a big deal to her. Like, I know
it's
her brother.
It could just be a fresh, like, just you don't expect to be reminded of your dead brother, and bam. Like, I don't know what that feels like, but I imagine. And Karen's a little bit emotional anyway.
Right. No, I guess that makes sense. It felt odd to me as a viewer because I didn't immediately make that connection like she does, because it is kind of almost a throwaway thing that I didn't expect to come back. So,
yeah. And I think out of the Trinity that Karen is the one that's closest to her emotional state.
Oh, yeah.
Foggy is the furthest removed, and then Matt is kind of like protects.
He's in denial.
Yeah, he tries to do it as a way to protect himself.
Doesn't want to deal with it, yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about Daredevil.
Yeah, he's got a lot of stuff in this.
Daredevil punches his way to the bookkeeper.
To the Gibson farm? He tells him about the farm?
Which I thought there was a hilariously cool takedown where, you know, the guy, this nerd is trying to pull a gun on the Daredevil. Uh-huh. And he just, like, it's so slickly takes him down. And we find out that they're not actually bodyguards, what we thought. They're actually holding him as a hostage, and they have his son in this location called The Farm. Again, capital T, capital F in the closed caption.
I thought they were going somewhere really cool with his lines about, like, I'd rather die than talk about the hand than take you over there.
Yeah, because he's terrified.
So, okay, a society that makes themselves immortal. Imagine, I mean, they could literally create hell on Earth for you if they were to torture you to death. Over and over and over again. They could literally create hell.
That's like, you've read a lot of the EU Star Wars. You know that that's like that was established as like one of Palpatine's favorite, like he would throw you in a cloning
in the clone
tank.
Chamber? Oh, see, that's
a little
different,
though.
Bring you out,
kill you, and then do it over and over and over again.
Right, right. That is more for his amusement, but...
The consciousness, he used this as forced transference to make sure you die a thousand deaths.
All right,
the coward's
so, yeah.
death, yes.
But when you think about it, that's really pretty fucking scary.
Yeah, torture you, throw you in a Lazarus pit. They can make it last forever.
So that's where I thought they were going, but they didn't. They instead just have his brother. They do the cliched thing of, they've got my son.
We still have a good, four episodes left?
It's true. I hope they use that machine for more than just, we've got an immortal band of ninjas.
Sure. That would be interesting.
Literal hell in Hell's Kitchen.
I've been introducing that concept in literary fiction a few times, but I've never actually seen it on the screen. That would be chilling.
Could be horrifying.
Sure. So they go to the farm.
Which is just a Pottery Barn franchise. Let's not kid ourselves.
And Matt is horrified to find that they have a bunch of children in cages. They're slowly being drained of their blood and pumped into a metallic dark coffin that I can only assume contains Ozzy Osbourne.
Right. Black Sabbath.
Yes. I mean, this is how he's like, I gotta undo all this damage to my brain, Sharon. It's gotta get in this coffin. Terrible Ozzy.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm trying to go for. As you know, you can tell that, like, Matt's fucking shaken about this whole thing.
As he should be.
I found it, like, genuinely creepy when he goes down there and there's all this occult, mystical Japanese sorcery going on.
Yeah, he hears the sounds of blood, which lead him downstairs, and then this is the comeback of the kids, right? From season one.
Yeah.
This is what
this
they
is
were
what
doing,
we don't
importing
know
all these
what,
children.
But this is why all this human trafficking apparently was happening.
Yeah.
And then suddenly a ninja in a London fog coat attacks. We're expected to remember who he was. It's the red ninja from last season who Daredevil burnt in that complex fire, Nobu.
Yeah, he rips off his mask. I didn't remember Nobu? Nobu. I didn't remember who this
Nobu
guy was. I remembered the fight, but, you know, a lot of people have weapons. A lot of people have the same weapons.
I don't know.
I wasn't sure.
I didn't recognize him. I knew that he was supposed to be an important guy until he got the chained blades. I did remember that.
Okay. And then you
and then they've also been mentioning his name, the kind of jog, you know, I looked him up when the first, and I'm like, okay, yeah. And when I was trying to put together the mystery of the whole, but yeah,
you caught on faster than I did. I didn't remember who this guy was. I was like, who Scarface guy? Why do I care?
And his face is all burnt up from the fire, but he should have died and he didn't.
Right.
So he cuts the blood tube. He says, it's not finished. And he cuts the blood tube, shoves the coffin into a service elevator.
Kicks Daredevil's ass one last time.
Yeah, right. Sends him on his way.
Yeah.
And Daredevil says, you're dead. And he says, there's no such thing. And then what I thought was the most intriguing thing, elevator goes down.
Okay.
Like that.
Yeah.
Is something creepy that's like, it's hellish, right? He's escaping to some subterranean he's not trying to get out in a way like every person on the planet would. He's going down into hell. He also, I thought it was funny that the, who I thought was the leader of the Hand, and it turns out he's just middle management, he calls Daredevil, what did he call him? Akuma-san.
Okay.
Which is kind of like saying Mr. Devil in Japanese, because Akuma is some kind of wicked Japanese spirit.
All right.
But yeah, Mr. Devil to you. Yeah. What else we want to talk
about? I have a big question about the end of this.
Yeah?
Why the fuck doesn't Nobu kill Daredevil?
Well, last time he tried, he got his ass burnt up, and it's more important to get the... I'm with child to know what is in that goddamn Japanese Iron Maiden coffin.
Right. I imagine it's somebody.
Sure, it's got to be. It's a coffin. It's some kind of crypt.
Is it going to be like a...
The sarcophagus is what you'd call it.
Is it going to be like the Strain sort of thing, where you got this like wispy, almost kind of smoke god sort of thing? Is he going to be human or not?
I'm not seeing anyone from the Hand that's not human.
Okay. But the blacksmith...
But if the other thing
no
is...
No one's ever seen the blacksmith. Nobody knows who he is. Like...
But is he, like, that's the thing, like, why has he been dead for so long? Like, if he's, like, this special eternal warrior, and they've got resurrection technology, I mean, did they have to do this whole
process? You could ask the same about Lestat or any of the vampires,
what I'm saying is, if they had to do this shit to someone like Nobu, who is not as important in the grand, like, he's not Dark Sky.
Right, why bring him back?
Why bring him back if you could just brought back this asshole? Like,
right.
I'm hoping that this all makes, and it might not, because this is a comic book show.
This might be like a monthly ritual, and it takes a little bit, and like,
yeah,
like, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Is this guy special, or is he just, they're just showing us how this operation goes?
It's a good question. I still don't feel like the question of, why didn't he kill Daredevil was adequately answered.
Well,
because
I mean,
Daredevil
this guy
is a thorn
special
in their side, and just kill him. You've got him down. Just do what you got to do and then leave.
But Daredevil straight up beat him last time. And if this coffin is super important to their plans, then it's more important to get that away than it is finish off Daredevil and maybe trip on your own dick, get killed again, and then Daredevil opens up the coffin and.
Okay.
It's Lord Voldemort half cooked, and now I'm just going to break your neck.
Yep.
Or whatever. Yeah, I don't know.
But he can't kill, so he wouldn't.
That's true.
Let him live. Send him to prison.
Yeah. So what else? Oh, Fisk has a last meal with Dutton. I thought that was pretty.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I like his ramrod stiff eating scenes. And I'm liking the fact that he's doing this kind of elegant style in his...
Right. Like his ritual that he had at the table every morning, yeah.
But he's in his crisp oranges. Like he's not the kind of gangster that's going to get a nice silk robe put into the jail. Like everything looks legit, but he's still going to live high. Like I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's like his external thing is not what's important to him. It's all about the internal with him. Like he's like, you know, even if he's not going to slouch in jail. Fuck you. He's going to eat his. Whatever his ritual was, his toast and his eggs, and he doesn't need the silk robe to do it.
Nope. He's savoring his victory.
It's his idea of a low profile.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he pretty much owns the prison at this point, yeah?
Yeah. So I'm saying he could do those things, but he chooses not to, and I think that's an important characterization for him. All right, listeners, time to pitch the club to you. And I understand. We're dealing with listeners of all levels of engagement with Bald Move here. You know, maybe... Mm-hmm. And all different economic situations. Maybe you're like the kingpin just coming into the big house. You got your white suit on. You're kind of unsure of yourself. Your funds might be low. You might have spent your last buck bribing a prison official. But maybe some of you are sitting there orange suit kingpin. And you're drinking your Chianti while you're listening to your rival drown himself in his own blood. maybe you can spare a buck or two to join the club. It's easy. Go to club.baldmove.com. It's got tons of special features, ad-free feeds, bonus podcast, extra content, and the satisfaction of knowing you're enabling this content to be created. Because we couldn't do it without you. There would not be a Daredevil podcast. There wouldn't be pretty much anything except for watching Dead, Better Call Saul, and Game of Thrones if it wasn't for us being able to do this on a full-time basis. So if that's important to you, please check out club.baldmove.com. If you don't want an ongoing commitment and you like shopping online, another great way to help us out is to remember to use amazon.baldmove.com before you visit. And that way everything you purchase doesn't cost you a thing. It just throws money to Bald Move's way, and it's great. And if you're in a foreign market, you can go to support.baldmove.com. And we actually have foreign market Amazon accounts for a lot of major countries. Check that to see if you're one of them. And thanks again for supporting us.
Let's do feedback.
As I promised, we have a double-sized feedback bag since we were kind of light last week or last episode. Michael B starts off, I think this was for 206, said, I was starting to wonder about the direction of the season, and I think... though it might be obvious by now that we have a theme. Should we allow someone like the Punisher to take law in his own hands by letting him become a judge, jury, and executioner? Some would say no, some would say yes, but like Claire said in season one about Matt, you're the man this city has created. I believe that can also be said about the Punisher. He would have never went down this road of killing like this if it weren't for the city taking his family from him. The question is the city made Daredevil... Is Frank the man that the same city made, or is Frank the man that the city that Daredevil made? Does that make sense?
Right. So and now is that an interesting now distinction? That the city has made Daredevil, is Daredevil changing the city?
Yes. Is this an escalation?
It feels like it. It does. I mean, maybe it was an inevitable one. And, you know, the city creates a guy like Daredevil, and Daredevil creates guys like Punisher, and who knows where that goes from here. But either way, I think that is what's happening.
All right.
He's starting to shape the city as much as it shaped him.
Okay. King Mob has questions that are a little bit of a comic booky, discussion of his powers, but I'm going to allow it because we kind of did it ourselves.
Okay.
Just finished listening to the podcast for episode 6, where Jim and Aaron wondered if Daredevil's radar sense was granular enough to detect tape on the floor.
Yeah.
Having now watched episode 8, their debate made me wonder, does this version of Daredevil actually have a radar sense? If he did, the hand ninjas in episode being completely silent would not have fazed him at all. Instead, because he can't hear their heartbeats, Matt says he can't pinpoint their locations. Thinking back on it, I don't think the show has ever implied or said that he has a radar sense as we know it in the comics. In episode 5 of season 1, Matt describes what he sees as an amalgamation of inputs from his other senses. Never mentions a separate radar sense. In episode 7, when Matt is being trained by Stick, he says he can sense where things are and when they move, but a sense of hearing and touch could account for that.
Oh, totally. I didn't mean to imply that he has like an extra different type of sense that most people don't have. If that's what they thought.
And the world on fire portrayed on his perception is definitely not the 360-degree 3D image of his surrounding I always assumed he had. I don't know that I agree with that, though.
Hearing is pretty much a 360 sense.
Yeah,
so
like you
I
might
think...
have it stronger in a like 180-degree FARC arc in front of you because your ears are facing that way. But
not... It wouldn't be completely blank behind you, certainly.
No. It'd be cool if he had the... the vestigial ear muscles that we have, like, you know, cats and dogs can swivel their ears around so they can overcome that weakness. It'd be funny if his mutation
allowed... That would be so weird looking.
His ears are just rotating and stuff.
No. That would be so off-putting. Even under a helmet, like, if he had these things moving constantly.
Sure. It'd be hilarious. This leads me to believe that Netflix's Daredevil doesn't have the comic book canon radar sense. He places combatants' locations by proximity.
Oh, he does in the comics?
Well, I mean,
he has actual radar?
No, I mean, it's it's always described as echolocation,
right.
Which to me, it's like, is essentially the same as radar sense.
Sure. I think he should walk around going mop, mop, like Archer does, sure, to locate, like to have the sound waves bounce off.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be pretty funny.
I guess I took it as like a combination of the ninja's robes being some kind of like stealthy material, and they're right, reducing their heartbeats.
And their movement is smooth and because all
the,
that
he
stuff,
can detect
yeah,
their weapons, so... I mean, again, I don't know how it happens, but I don't think this means that he doesn't have 3D vision.
He can see negative space, too, though.
Sure.
Which I don't understand how a ninja could possibly not create negative space by not bouncing whatever it is back to him. Like, there, it's an either-or. It's like a logical fallacy that you would be able to not show up on his thing and also not create negative space.
I don't know, because I hear, like, I've read a lot of submarine fiction, and I hear, like, one of the hardest things to detect is, like, a whale.
Okay.
Because they are made of most of the same material that the surrounding water is. They're extremely quiet. Right. They don't cause any cavity. It's like, a lot of times, submarines run into them.
Jesus.
They'd never run into another submarine. They never, but they're not exactly holes in the ocean. They're just like right, transparent to the sense they're using. And I feel like
okay,
if these robes are actually stealth, and I'm making all this shit, I'm pulling this right out of my fan ass.
Sure.
But I feel like that they don't show up as holes. They show up as like transparent.
They almost like diffuse his sense, instead
which doesn't make sense when you're talking about
echolocation.
Like,
doesn't really happen that way. I don't know, unless you can diffuse it around you, like you know the what is it, active or inactive stealth stuff where light kind of bends around and you see through the other side. Maybe they can do something like that.
Did you ever go? You went up and you. So one place I worked was an abandoned facility at the right, old RCA Thompson Labs in Indianapolis. And
yeah, it was like Kodak. It was like yeah, color. What's
Technicolor?
The term? Technicolor was, studio.
But
yeah,
even before. But so this thing was in an abandoned part that I technically wasn't supposed to go into. Mm. But you know, I do some urban spelunking, and I found this thing called the anechoic chamber.
Yeah,
and you go in this vault, and there is like a mesh floor. And there's all this, like, just really steep fiberglass paneling that's cut into this, like, acoustic pattern. And when you go into the room and shut the door, it's the oddest sense. It's like when, if you've ever been in a cave and they turn off all the lights and you experience absolute black for the first time.
Yeah.
It's like that with your ears.
It's
like, they almost
bizarre,
pop. Uh-huh. I wonder what happens you throw Matt in a chamber like that.
He's probably blind.
I think I wonder if they'll like
actually blind, like unable to tell where he is and what he's doing. And,
yeah, I think I might have posted like pictures or a video in the ancient bowel because we filmed the video there.
We did. We did some Kickstarter stuff that I don't know if we ever used. Maybe
yeah,
we did.
I wonder if I can find a picture of that. If
I know I still have the video somewhere.
Right on. Anyway, it's a little odd thought that you know why we're geeking out about his powers.
Right.
So it's weird. I don't know how to draw a distinction between echolocation and radar, and I disagree with his analysis that they haven't established that he does have some kind of 360 because he can sense
a
baseball
yeah,
bat coming from behind his head.
Right. He definitely at least has some kind of hearing. I don't know, augmented hearing.
Yeah.
That he can tell stuff's coming from behind him.
Chris A says, what the hell is the deal with the U.S. flag in a courtroom only having 48 stars? The 48-star flag was in use between 1912 and 1949 before Alaska and Hawaii were admitted into the Union. What does this say about the time in which Daredevil is set? Is it that far in the past, or perhaps
no,
some post-apocalyptic
no,
future where we lost or gave away two states? If so, which two got the boot? Do you have an I did
I think
some
it's
digging.
I think feel like it's just a historical artifact. Like, that flag is just from the past, not that the show's set in the past.
So we talked a little bit on House of Cards, how like there's real CNN and real MSNBC and real Fox News in this world, and you see those broadcasts and those anchors.
Mm-hmm.
But when like the president would die, oh, I'm sorry, that was a massive spoiler. The president doesn't die, but like if the president were to die, something like that were to happen, they always go to some clearly fictitious news agency. And we theorized that they did that because they don't want some prankster on YouTube causing an international panic by saying, oh no, this has happened. And like, you know, I wonder if when they're setting in a real court, if that's like a Hollywood, the same way they use like 555 extensions on phones.
Right.
I wonder if that's like they use a 48-star flag, so if someone tries to use this footage to cobble something together, that like it's quickly you could determine that it's bullshit. Because that's the, okay. I mean, I would buy that there's some kind of Hollywood. I mean, I don't know if I haven't counted the stars on many flags on television, but
yeah, I didn't notice it.
Otherwise, because it would have to be hard. It's got to be hard to get a 48-star flag.
Like an authentic one, or I mean, you can fabricate
something. That's what I'm saying. Like sure. You have to special order it. They intentionally did this. Like it's not like they ordered a flag and oh, I got a 48-star when it came. Yeah.
Oh, hey Joe, bring in that flag you got.
Yeah. Right.
Oh well, I don't know, guys. That's 48 stars on it. No, it'll be fine.
Is there a political faction that just hates Hawaii and Alaska and thought America should never let those riffraff into the union?
Probably.
It's a protest flag.
Yeah.
Okay. So. I don't know. If you got a better theory than that, let me know. Aaron R. follows up from last episode where he clued us into all the similarities between Daredevil and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and we both kind of balked about Casey Jones. He sent me a 5-minute YouTube that has Casey Jones being insane. He's definitely like a G-rated Punisher. He's going around in a dirty, hairy voice talking about, oh, lawbreakers, all lawbreakers, and he's throwing them into dope machines, and he's wearing a hockey mask that looks like a skull.
Oh, so, does it? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like hockey mask to me doesn't say Punisher at all.
In the 80s cartoon version, which I assume is based on the class, I do know that the classic comic is quite a bit darker.
Yeah,
and grittier, but you know, in a parody style. But no, it clearly looks like a skull. So I'm gonna post that in show notes if you want to have a blast from the past. Dummy says, I'm glad this episode picked up the pace after last couple of, in my opinion, clunkers. They did trot out my least favorite storylines, people who die but don't, even on shows where people being brought back to life is a thing. I hate it because it's cheap. I'm really liking this show, so I hope that it doesn't become too prominent.
Don't watch Battlestar Galactica.
Or Game of Thrones, or, you know, the list goes on. Yeah. I prefer death to be a consequence and not just a hurdle. I broadly agree, but I do... If you establish it as a fact in the universe, you better do something interesting with it, and someone better be able to meet the true death, quote unquote, or else what the hell are we doing?
This is the crux of the problem I have with all fantasy-based fiction, is you can really just do anything. Like, I could say, well, I don't know, obviously this doesn't happen. Harry Potter didn't die because, you know, Hermione had her wizarding hat on, and you obviously know you can't die when you have your thumb up your ass, so he didn't die. Of course not.
When you stick your thumb up, you gotta say, oh, what a good boy am I, or it doesn't work.
Right. You can bring back anybody for any reason. All of the plot can change at a given moment. Like, there are no rules except the ones you make, and you can always make new rules.
But I think that's... I'm not trying to convert you, but this is actually an organic conversation. I like that... I feel like I'm going to talk about, as a fantasy lover, why I like it. Because there's this contract between the author and the reader, or the watcher, or whatever.
Right.
Where, at the beginning, you don't know the precise rules, and the author is giving those rules, and every time he gives a rule, he's essentially, he or she is putting themselves in a straitjacket. Because they can't break that rule, you're going to call bullshit on them.
Yeah.
But there's also this tension between, do you have to set these rules out at a particular pace? Because else, people can just clearly see that you're trying to give yourself wiggle room to do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this kind of like dance you do between the audience's suspension of disbelief and wanting to be fed these mechanics, and the author not wanting to be held down by the mechanics. And then, you know, the best science fiction fantasy lays these rules on, you get a good understanding of what is and isn't possible.
Right.
And then they don't. And you get it gradually.
Yeah. And I think that's a super important thing. Like,
it's like a true crime mystery. Like, if they just said, "Hey, here's the bad guy. Here's just what's eventually going to happen." Now, that wouldn't be satisfying. The mystery is discovering. And usually, they give you a hero who is an initiate, and he's learning the rules
as you are.
So it's you're not aware that you're being spoon fed the universe.
Right. And as long as they don't make, you know, as long as they don't say, "Here's a new rule, and it's going to change the outcome of this super important thing that you thought was going to go one way."
Yeah.
As long as they don't do that all at once,
yeah.
I guess it can be okay. But I don't know. I guess I'm I need to read better fantasy fiction.
Well, I mean, but the other thing is, like, that's not everyone's cup of tea. Like, I understand the charms of true crime. I just don't like it. So, okay. Whereas, like, a lot
and
of
I guess
people...
in this, I kind of just let it go. Like, you can have Black Sabbath in there. You can have a whole digging to the middle of the universe. I don't really care.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of more along for the ride here.
Right. Okay.
So, I don't know.
Well, but I mean, there again, if you found that 48-story floor was like a thruster and it was designed to push the Earth into the sun, and then when they turned it on, it was a repulsor drive and pushed them over to Pluto, you'd be like, what the fuck? Like, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying I have a super coherent reason for disliking fantasy, but I do have reasons, and maybe it's only because I've read bad fantasy. Because I've never read Game of Thrones, but Game of Thrones, the show, is doing it for me.
And also, it's talking about the slow burn on the fantasy.
Right.
Holy shit.
That's what I mean, yeah. They're introducing these rules very, very slowly.
Right, which I'm actually surprised more people haven't called out Martin on, like, okay, so what is possible? We're 5 books in, George. How come I don't know for sure what, you know, this mechanic and how this works? But... He's got a double, like, not only is he, you're talking about initiates, the whole fucking world has largely assumed that magic doesn't work anymore, and now, so it's like, I don't know. He's doing some clever shit there.
Sure.
Emma W. says, pretty hard for me to believe that Fisk would have that level of influence with the guard so quickly, but everything else in the episode completely made up for it. The cell block scene was incredible. I can't believe how far they're going with the violence this season. I remember thinking that, I was like, I wonder if I could let my son watch this episode. And it's episodes like this where it's like, no, he needs to be...
Multiple guys with their throats slit open.
Yeah. Like, you know, everyone's kid's different, but I feel like my kid needs to be closer to 12, 13 before he starts watching this shit. It's definitely mature.
Yeah.
Fisk taking over to prison solves his money issues as well, so you'll now have a cash flow from prison contraband business, so it'll be interesting to see how much he can affect what's going on the outside. Well, here's the thing. If he can let people in and out of the prison, why wouldn't he just make the prison his headquarters? He can go out and see Vanessa. Mm-hmm. She can come in and see him. He can drink his fine wines and his Egg McMuffins.
Yeah. Maybe build a, like, I don't know, a glass tower or something on top of it.
Yeah.
To replicate his home.
Sure. I wonder if that's going to be like the... you know, his kind of thing for the rest of the season, maybe not on the next, that he's, hey, I'm in prison. What do you, that would be kind of funny. Like, what do you want? Right. I'm in prison.
He's almost like immune to being prosecuted for anything else.
Yeah. Like how does Daredevil fight that? You know,
you can't kill
Matt
me.
Matt Murdock has thrown
him
in jail.
You can't put me in prison.
Matt, the Daredevil can't go and beat the shit out of him in prison. Like, that would kind of be an interesting stalemate.
Yeah. Hmm.
Jeff says, I think I need to see a therapist. I can't stop laughing in amazement whenever the Punisher goes on one of his killing sprees. I can't imagine being able to watch this character in any other style after seeing him in this. I don't think you need to see a therapist because I have that same giggle response when there's just horrific, over-the-top, insane violence. And that's the key. It has to be over, like, absurd.
It's awesome in the true meaning of the word, right?
Yes. Yes. Like, inspiring
and
a fear
some people's
and
reaction
and,
to awe is to giggle to
yeah
to I don't know have a reaction you wouldn't expect so I get it
but I totally agree with you. Chris says, I don't suppose we'll get any explanation of how the hole was dug out at this point. It looks like we're moving more firmly into mystical territory very soon. I hope not, man, because I'm gonna be fucking disappointed if I don't know precisely what the hell they were doing at the hole, this coffin, and the blood. Like,
yeah.
They owe me that now.
I think we'll get to it.
Okay.
Probably this season, I hope.
I think
this
so.
Season?
No, that's what I'm saying. This season.
Like, needs to happen this season?
I don't need to know what Black Sky is necessarily, but I need to know what they were trying to do and the items involved.
Right.
You know, like, the culminate, because it seems like no one knows what Black Sky is. They're trying to make it happen. Mm-hmm. I need to know what ingredients they're mixing in the pot, or else, what the fuck? Chris says, I also want to know what's up with that article in Ben's office. He mentioned that someone on Reddit screencapped the entire article. There's mention of a Kevin Page being killed in the car accident, which we already discussed.
Mm-hmm.
I, too, am very curious about that. Garth Gow says, was so awesome to see D'Onofrio back. He just kills it in this role. I know it may not be everyone's cup of tea, but that final shot of him in the prison hospital room was chilling. Is it ever mentioned how long a time span between the season one finale and the season two premiere was? Wasn't it a year?
I don't remember.
I know that they strongly implied, and I thought it was a year.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
But it's also, I want to say 2 years, but I'm pretty sure that's only because I just saw the Banshee episode and they had a flash forward in this too. So it's like, it's all fucking with me.
I think it might be 2 years. You might be right. There might've even been a title card that says 2 years later.
Okay. Yeah. I felt like that they definitely established it was between 1 and 2 years.
These could be false memories, but that's what I remember.
I just incepted you, man.
Yeah, you did.
Anyway, I only asked because Fisk walked into jail with like 2 very minor cuts in his face at the beginning of the episode. He had to have spent some time in the hospital after a fight between Daredevil and him at the end of season 1. I thought so too. I was surprised. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing,
they show the cut in the flashback.
He didn't go from beaten the hell beat out of him from Daredevil to prison. They talked about there's a court case. He lost. There's a plea deal they're working. They're doing an appeal. So he went through the wheels of justice. Let's say 4 to 6 weeks, if it was expedited all the hell, which I imagine the Fisk would want to drag it out. So he had time to heal up.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if it's the full, you know, because this is obviously, I don't know how much, the thing I'm curious about is how much time elapsed from him wearing his whites to when he started paying off people, rolling 3 deep and getting the guards on his side. Like that could have been 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
And that's why it's like some people might like, I think a lot of people think that he came into prison and took over within the week. I think that his going from white to orange suggests a passage of time.
I think so.
And then the fact that he's built all this stuff and spent all this money, like it might have been a lot longer than the show implies, but they were jumping back and forth and it's hard to tell. That's kind of, and in which case that's kind of sloppy. We could use some title cards or some sepia tone or something to tell when we came.
Maybe they want to leave the timeline loose. I don't know.
That's true because you can get yourself in trouble by putting yourself in those straitjackets.
Yeah.
Anyway, he continues, this show continues to just buck any sort of realistic consequence of violence. Fisk has a bloodied nose after getting headbutted and punched like 5 times by the Punisher. That's kind of throwing me for a loop because in season 1 seemed to have much more stakes as far as that goes. Like another poster mentioned earlier in the season, this is just getting to be video game territory.
Wait. Kingpin is a brutal superhuman being, yeah? I mean, I don't know that he actually has, like, super strength or super ability to take a punch, but he's a physically well-built guy. I don't know that he necessarily would, you know, take a headbutt and not... And just be devastated by it. Like,
okay. Yeah.
I'm thinking he's stronger than the average human, so...
It's like punching a 20-pound ham, you know?
Take more.
So I disagree in that particular example, but I broadly agree that one of the things I really fell in love with, and I tend to like, I like vulnerable heroes. Okay. I like heroes that are like the Weeble Wobble. Mm-hmm. Wolverine's perfect example. His prime ability is just to be able to take a fucking ass kicking and keep going. And I like that about season 1 Daredevil is that he prevailed despite being exhausted, despite his broken ribs, despite his concussions. He found a way to keep fighting forward. Whereas now ever since they put him on a super suit, like he's got a super suit, which because we talked about, like that's a good way because you can't have a human body take that much punishment week in and week out and not have you be like you're going to be a 40-year-old football player in 6 weeks if you keep taking that punishment.
Right.
So you got his super suit, but you got Frank running around and, you know,
but he
prison
got the
scrubs.
Fuck beat out. I'm looking at Frank's face. Frank's face hasn't healed yet.
But it doesn't affect
from...
him. He goes and he gets in a full face brawl with the Kingpin, who then picks
full
him up and body slams him, and he still's like not reading the worst. He's walking out without any limps or anything.
Right. That is a little unbelievable. But I also felt like Matt in season 1 was a little unbelievable. He took an extraordinary amount of punishment, and I know they made him mentally resilient and able to fight through it, but he took a lot of punishment. And it hurt him. But I feel like he took a superhuman amount of punishment.
Well, and I felt like they did walk that line because yes, it never stopped him. But in the acting, they always gave me the impression that Matt was just barely winning these fights.
Right. It was borderline season 1. I think you're right. The Punisher has been a little too superhuman in his ability to take damage.
But I think they also might be implying that his brain damage might have like dulled his ability to feel pain.
Does it dull his ability for his bones to break?
True.
Is he drinking? Are they feeding him a lot of milk there in prison?
Because he also had a half inch drill bit put through his foot.
That's true.
Like and less than a month off. Ago, because they fast tracked a trial and all that stuff. So
he did have a limp, but he walked it off.
Yeah, he rubbed some dirt on it. But I agree, it's that the gritty realism and of the violence was more in the Banshee territory last season. This it's more comic booky, and I kind of wish they'd go back.
With Fisk, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, because Fisk can absorb a lot of punishment.
Yeah.
And also, this is all just cosmetic shit anyway.
Right.
Like, Punisher's taking structural damage.
That's true.
Dominic P. says, I was having a discussion with my wife about the moral imperatives Matt's finding himself adhering to and finding that we were in conflict. I want to know what you guys think. Not that I'm 100% on Matt's side of it, but I do find an interesting challenge to let your opposition live rather than to kill them.
They were Karen and Matting it?
They were.
They were having an actual
spat? No, I think it's worse than that. It's Daredevil and Elektra.
Oh.
Dominic's all Daredevil and his wife is all like, fuck that, kill the kid. Tactically, it's a must. He notes, I clearly love my wife, but I bet you sleep with one eye open around her.
You should.
The no-kill clause was one of Batman's trademarks, but for some reason it doesn't come across as irritating to the viewer in the context of the Batman. I think this is because all of his villains conveniently die of their own devices, at least in the film anyway, such as Ra's al Ghul, Bane, Ra's's daughter, Joker not being dead, but Heath died, eliminating that character's return, etc. In the context of Daredevil, it's almost like watching Star Trek, in that for the world of the 24th century, at least for humans in the Federation, taking the action to kill is not taken lightly, and these characters struggle with that moral imperative as well. I recently got the Blu-rays for the entire series, and there are many times in the first season, and I kind of forgot about this, where they all admit that it'd be easy to get things their way just by overpowering nearly all species they encounter. Burkhardt even says, the thought has, of course, occurred to me, but he still chooses to route of peace to comply with the Prime Directive. Of course, the difference being that Matt doesn't want to kill because of his religious beliefs, which I think he holds sacred despite bending a lot of them. Batman didn't want to become his own enemy. For Star Trek, it's a matter of moral civility and demonstrating their species advancement. So on the one hand, I do think that maybe it's better to kill your enemy to protect yourself or the ones you love. I admire adhering to a moral imperative no matter how hard it gets and how hard it works against you. Which I think is the reason that Matt decided to end his partnership and his friendship with both Foggy and Karen. He fucked things up, but I think he wanted to, somehow unconsciously, because his nightlife is not going away and it's not worth risking their lives.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what is he going to do? Breaking the arms of a domestic abuser? Yeah, that probably converts an asshole husband to a life of less violence. Doubtful. Not exactly civil, however, it might work. But what do you guys think? What do you do with the guys that kill without a second thought? And despite his vigilante actions, Matt does largely believe in the law because that's his strongest mitigation for the bad guys. And it's civil recourse, highlighting his issue with Karen's pro-ish Punisher stance. The problem is that in both cases, it's just a put-off. I think what Matt might have done is broken those kids' arms because, law or not, he's out for 6 months of his life, right? A long time to rethink what got you in the position you are.
Yeah, they don't have an arm-fixing chamber. They can bring you back to life, but they're not going to fix your limbs that quickly.
Arguments can be made that jail connects criminals rather than reforms them. This is truly murky stuff, and I like it. This is interesting because this goes with the whole Kingpin's now in jail, but he's still the Kingpin.
Right.
Like, what does Matt do with that information?
This is a big issue to unpack, right? And I feel like there's a distinction to be made, obviously, in comic book land and the real life. I think both of us have staked our claim on vigilante justice does not work in real life.
Yep.
Now, I think with perfect knowledge, you can make those calls and you can say, these are the people who deserve it in these fictional
worlds. Sure, it's like the benevolent dictator theory.
Right, right.
It would be perfect.
Theoretically, in this fictional world, the Punisher is justified in killing a fair amount of the people he's been killing,
sure.
I think. If there's someone killing remorselessly and you have no other recourse but to kill them, I say go for it in these fictional worlds.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter that you have a crying son or daughter that you left behind.
Right.
Like, Hitler had people that loved him too.
Right.
Doesn't mean
and
he
the
didn't
people
need
you're
to go.
Killing also have families, also have
sure.
things that are going to be affected
yes.
by them dying.
Yes.
So you dying is kind of the greater or the lesser of the two evils.
Sure.
than to let you continue to kill more and more people.
But it is interesting to have a hero that rejects the that lesser of two evils philosophy. He pursues what he considers upright and righteous regardless of the cost.
And I'm also with the emailer whose name I didn't catch.
Dominic?
Dominic, in when he says that he can respect somebody who does hold to those philosophies. I think those are very good things to hold on to. I don't know that in this world that we're being shown, Daredevil's method is very effective.
Yeah, and I wonder if they'll be able to find a middle path going forward. Although Daredevil that's killing people...
Like, maybe if jail worked better, but Kingpin certainly hasn't had any problems doing what he wants to do in prison.
The problem is once you kill people, you become a criminal. Like, the law in the comic book land might overlook in you beating the piss out of someone, but that's interesting to the Punisher and, you know, Spider-Man. Spider-Man's a mass vigilante that the cops like.
Right.
Punisher's a mass vigilante that's essentially shoot on sight.
Yeah.
And that has its own complications in the universe, too, because, you know, Daredevil can go up and have a conversation with the police and work with them, whereas the Punisher can't ever do that.
Yeah.
So I think that's another interesting element, that there are, you know, there's different levels of being outside the law.
Right, right, and different consequences for each of them.
Yes. Eli L. from the Bronx says, wants to comment on this episode because I thought it was a really critical episode for Matt when considering his relationships with Foggy and Karen. I thought it was refreshing to see the accountability presented to us outside of Matt's heroism. It's cool to see a character not being excused for the more interpersonal his responsibilities just because his grander general ones. In lesser shows, Matt's behavior would have been justified by his actions as Daredevil because of the fact that he is a self-appointed protector of Hell's Kitchen, but it was realistically shown that Matt's position as protector is a self-appointed one. First and foremost, just like Foggy had said, you can't go around creating danger and then protect us from that danger.
Yeah. Insane.
Matt had created a self-perpetuating cycle with the devil worshippers and Frank Castle that had trapped Karen and Foggy in that cycle with them. His actions for, and again, with imperfect knowledge, like it's one thing to endanger someone's life and they're supporting you, but to just do it, that's pretty ballsy, Matt. Anyway, his actions for the quote-unquote greater good have sabotaged the good of the Castle case, and you can say the firm by extension, and also his friendship with Foggy and his budding relationship with Karen. Matt, with his quote-unquote superior sense of morals and religious belief, have created a selfishness within the selfishness. I think it's really relevant to say that heroism, as we see it in Matt or Frank, comes with a sense of superiority, a complex that I think Foggy has hit on the head. When you just look at the way that Matt talks about his city and his job, he's no different than Frank in the inverse of Fisk. The sense of possession and protectedness are things that are very much insane. It has made him jaded into the more personal repercussions of his actions, all for the sake of protecting them. Matt is so blind, no pun intended, by his desire to protect the kitchen that he has allowed Foggy and Karen to be collateral damage. I personally find that slippery slope between heroism and selfishness to be an interesting one, as each sacrifice Matt makes not only affects him but those around him, and if he would decide if those sacrifices will continue to be worth it. How long can Matt continue to hurt Karen and Foggy and still say that he was doing it to protect them? How long would it be until he is the one they need to protect, be protected from? Anything interesting you want to talk about there?
Yeah, I like the nuance of this idea of whether or not Matt is selfishly protecting this city. Because a lot of the times, you go back to some of these gangster movies, right? And the gangsters are always like, oh, yeah, we're gonna do right by our community and we're going to... All these people are going to be better off, the city. They're doing the same thing, but there's always kind of this sense of community built into it where, like, it's not just their responsibility to clean up the streets.
Sure.
And that's how a community needs to work, right? Everybody needs to participate if you're going to really even call it a community.
Yep.
At this point, is Hell's Kitchen even a community that Matt can save? Or has he turned it into something where it's
that's
just
a good question.
His thing, like, this is, I own this and I'm going to do as I see fit and eliminate the people who I think need to be eliminated, versus like going to the people and saying, I'm here to help, but you ultimately have to do this for yourselves.
Well, so that's interesting, because that's like the conservative case against government charity, right?
Sure.
Like, you take money involuntarily from people and distribute it to causes you support, then the average person sees a poor person on the street and they're like, ugh, don't I pay taxes so this doesn't happen? Rather than, oh God, look at this problem we have. We
you need have to soup attack kitchens. It from both ends.
We need volunteers. We need all that kind of stuff. I know.
Right, right.
So I'm saying, like, I think that's interesting that Matt essentially is creating, enabling people to, like, not,
yeah,
you know, be their brother's keeper because we've got the devil in Hell's Kitchen to protect us. So why do we need to get involved?
Yeah, and he doesn't even see
that as
a problem.
It's got a corrosive effect on the police because that's something right. the sergeant was complaining that, like, you know, Maloney is like, damn, you know, we're the guys on the force are even kind of losing focus on what we're doing here.
Yeah.
That's the moral questions that are asked in this is really, really cool.
Yeah, I don't know that they've really gone that route yet of this being a selfish thing. Yeah. Yes, it's certainly selfish that he wants to be Daredevil versus mm-hmm. like wanting to be a lawyer and help out his friends.
Sure.
I don't know that the show has actually gone that direction of, like, he's selfish for doing what he's doing and not involving the people in Hell's Kitchen.
Mm.
So maybe they'll take it that direction at some point.
Finishing up with Eli, he says, another theme I think is important is while Matt withdraws from his friends, he merges with the Daredevil persona and with Frank's influence, i.e. the increased brutality of his fight scenes that follow us as Matt is wrecked by his loss. Mm-hmm. I think you got to throw an Elektra in that stew, too.
Right.
Matt's no longer dividing himself from the Daredevil, and I think that is really important, because personally I feel all those self-imposed boundaries are just means to stop yourself from feeling complete responsibility, which once again is an important theme. Matt merging with the Daredevil is the most significant point of his arc thus far, because the first season was all about establishing that different differences, creating that alternate persona, finding the balance, but recognizing the space between the two. Yeah, that's I like this kind of more literary analysis of it because I feel like the Marvel Cinematic Universe is often accused of being kind of like bubblegum and pop and lightweight.
Yeah.
When in reality, they've already dealt with, you know, loss of friends and family, substance abuse problems, these deeper issues that I feel like are more adult than like whatever grim, dark Frank Miller fantasy you want to conjure up.
Right.
You know, like it's, you know, and this season hasn't been perfect, but I'm struggling to think of another comic book series that maybe is not Jessica Jones that treats the superhero in this kind of deconstructive way.
Yeah, and I think the gloss of the, just the look, like the look and feel of mm-hmm. a Marvel universe tends to get in the way of taking it a little too bubblegummy.
Sure.
Whereas in Daredevil, you kind of... You bring everything down. You bring the saturation. Not the saturation, yeah. but
no,
not a little bit on the saturation, but the brightness down.
That's what I've realized. Like, when I'm taking, like, when we've got a bunch of Daredevils on the front page, it's dark and drab and dreary. Like, I'm looking yeah. for pictures for screen caps that, like, are
if it's not
muddy,
in a hospital.
But even
it's
then,
not...
it's amazing how muddy and desaturated everything is. Like, the courtroom scene that I pulled out last episode. Still really dark and grimy for it being fully lit.
Yeah.
It's kind of it's now I'm not this isn't a complaint. I'm not saying it's muddy and
right.
murky. It's intentionally so because I feel like you should need a shower after you get out of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, and I feel like it does help the themes of this show
it's
to
grimy.
Have the visual style that it does
yeah.
versus like having Iron Man flying around in a red and yellow suit.
Sure.
Having Thor in his costume like those are hard things to get real dark with.
Yeah.
Because when you do it, it's like, well, I don't know, man. I don't buy that. Everything's too bright and happy and like, I don't know. You need a visual style to match your themes.
You're refuting my damn thesis, man. Yeah, I don't know. Cause,
no, I'm not refuting. I'm agreeing. Like, Daredevil having a darker look
but what I'm saying
is a good thing for the themes
yeah,
of the show.
Yeah, well, but what I'm trying to say is I think Captain America and Iron Man have already tread pretty...
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
Pretty dark things, despite them being very bubblegummy and shiny and reflective.
Yeah,
and
I guess
stuff.
I don't really know a lot of the stuff you're talking about. If it didn't sure. happen in Iron Man or Captain America 1.
No, you're right. Most of it happened in Iron Man 2.
Okay.
Captain America 2.
There you go.
All right, what you got to see. You got to see before
I need
we
to
see
before,
the Civil War.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to see the Iron Man shit.
At least Captain America.
At least the second Captain America, because I think you'll dig it.
You know what? I think I saw the second Iron Man. That was the one where there's the other suit, and he fights the dude in the other suit. Yeah.
Sure, yeah. But that happens in every Iron Man.
Not. Oh, I guess it does in
oh,
one.
Oh, so you lose Tony Stark. I know you've seen it, because that used to be a big joke. Don't you lose... You
right.
just kicked my ass.
When I say the other suit, I don't mean a cobbled together piece of shit that he built in the cave. I mean, an actual but proper Iron Man.
In the first movie, he fought the just giant hulking Jebediah Stank or whatever the fuck his name was.
That was the one where he built that in the cave, right? And no. And they pieced it back together. Didn't that happen?
I think you should. You know what, man?
I need to rewatch all of it.
You should write movie reviews of all the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Just based on your memories, I would love to see that.
Wait, is this the one where the dude?
This is the one where Tony Stark punches a dude in the suit. I'm pretty sure
the dude.
yes, the dude,
like the literal dude, Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, okay. Jeff Bridges. And the second one is the one that had Mickey Rourke,
right, Whiplash.
With the tatted up Whiplash, and but also had Don Cheadle
and the most ludicrous racing,
goes
out on the racetrack with his whip. I don't
know. Why not?
Okay,
get a little Charlie's Angels mixed in your Iron Man.
I background watch all this shit because. I don't care.
I know. I need to see a Jim. It would be great. Jim Jones reviews the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Maybe we should do background reviews, like where I go through and I think that'd be pretty funny.
Essentially, like if your girlfriend is browsing on her cell phone beside you, or your boyfriend, because sometimes I'm that guy. It writes a review of your favorite material.
Yeah,
that would be a funny like satire site.
I think so.
All right, well, speaking of satire,
we just missed April Fool's with that. It's a shame.
Well, next year. we're out of podcast.
Yeah.
If you'd like to send us email feedback, you can do so daredevil@baldmove.com or forums.baldmove.com. We have episode-by-episode descriptions. Don't forget to put in a episode number or title in the subject line if you're emailing me, so I know it's getting less and less to be a problem. But it helps me keep, all the emails straight and spoiler free and helps me not miss stuff. Cause I went back like 2 weeks to get a episode 6 comment. So I try, I do my best.
All right, cool. Well, we'll be back. Do you want to talk about our modified schedule?
I just want to remind them because I think we need to record a drop at the beginning of the episode, just as a reminder for something that we haven't said yet in real time, we are going to do the next episode, episode 2010, on Friday. And then we're going to do the final three episodes as one chunk. Because I feel like that's just the way we should have covered Netflix. And if I hadn't, we were shy about announcing it, but I think it's now the time to do it. Everybody but us has seen everything, and they're waiting for us to get to that point. So.
Right.
No more of this, Fron dance that we've been doing.
And it worked really well for us with House of Cards.
It did,
so.
And everybody loved it. Yeah. And if we'd have known then what we knew now, we would have gone to war with Daredevil like this. So that's what we're going to do next Monday. This upcoming Monday, we'll have the final three episodes, potentially a wrap-up after that, if it's warranted by the final three episodes and feedback, but we reserve the right to just have the final one.
Right.
So I feel like most people have seen it. So if you got your final thoughts, send them in to Daredevil labeled as such, and we might just have a colossal wrap-up episode.
All right, cool. Well, we'll see you guys on Friday regardless. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm A-Rod. Bye.